You're listening to Good Advice with Britt Flores. Simple ideas for complicated situations, designed to help you realize your best self, have your best days in each moment. Thanks for joining us. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. Welcome back to the Practice of Self-Care Good Advice with me, Britt Flores. Tonight, close to Christmas, just past solstice, ending out 2023, I have my last podcast guest. She is a pretty amazing therapist and a doctor, and her name is Dr. Andrea Annibale. And she's agreed to come play with me tonight and talk about.
I'm so excited.
Yay! I love it. All right, let's get through the disclaimer. Thoughts, views, and opinions expressed are our own. Podcast will cover diverse self-care practices, philosophies, techniques. We discuss the deep stuff, distressing and sometimes triggering topics. I don't know if we're going to do that tonight, but you never know. So if you are in a place where that is not mentally healthy for you, please turn it off. And no party foul on that. There are other podcasts to listen to. Podcast is for informational purposes only, should not be considered professional advice, although you are a professional. So, you know, I don't know how that disclaimer works.
It works the same. I can do things, but I can't, like, it's not professional advice. It's not therapy. So the things that things, but it's not therapy.
Yeah. They are the things though. So it's good advice.
It is.
Right.
Good advice.
But it's not a therapy session. We are not responsible for losses, damages, liabilities that arise from the use of this podcast. If you are feeling in a space of suicide or self-harm, please dial 911 or text 988 because there are people there that want to help you. And they literally do that for a living and they want to do it. So please reach out. Last but not least, we are rated, I put NC-17 for language. I think it's more of a mature audience, but some of the 12 and 13 year olds that I know have worse language than I do.
That's often the case.
But basically, if you're in a car with littles driving down the highway, I'm going to F-bomb at some point in this, more than likely.
Excellent.
I mean, it may not happen, but it's more than likely to happen. So maybe listen to it later. All right. And then Dr. Andrea Annibale, this is how you reach her. I'm going to give you an opportunity to talk about that too at the end of the podcast. But for those tuning in, if you're just kind of sitting down and you want to follow along, you can get on socials on IG and go to @onepsychservices. That's PSYCH. Services 10 or O-N-E. Oh, there goes my dyslexia. It's a zero,
it's a one,
right?
It's a zero. Yeah.
It's a 1-0. Your webpage is the same, onepsychservices.com. And then you can see Dr. Annibale and read all about her. I could read off what I picked off of your website, but it's more fun if you tell us about you.
Okay.
If you want.
Sure. Where would you like me to begin?
Oh, golly. Yeah. I mean, that's a dangerous question for me, like for you to ask.
Right.
Because where do you want to begin?
I don't know. I immediately went to sarcasm. So,
right? That's good.
Yeah.
You were raised by wolves.
I was raised by wolves in the forest.
And yeah, me too.
Yeah. So many things about me. I guess professionally we'll start with. I'm a psychologist. This is my second career. My first career was working at Yavapai College in higher ed for a long time. Actually, my very first career was being a mom. I got to stay at home with my kids for a while. and loved nice. That. And then they all got to school and I worked at Yavapai for a long time and worked in academic advising. That's what landed me here. I loved the students so much and I loved connecting with them and I loved hearing their stories and I loved being a part of their growth process. And at a certain point, realized that I wanted to do more than what I was ethically and legally allowed to do in terms of providing support. And so my option was to either get a second master's degree or to go for a terminal degree. And they were both going to take 4 years. So I thought, okay, right. A doctorate it is. And I love it. I'm so glad I did it.
Yeah, sure. You know, just go get your
just
doctorate,
do it.
Whatever.
It's fine. Yeah. So my kids were old enough. My oldest was out of the house. My older two were toward the end of high school. My husband has great flexibility. Everybody was awesome. So that's what I did there. In terms of personally, I live here. I've always lived here. In Prescott, wow. For those who are listening, I know I keep saying I'm going to get out and I have not yet. So here I am.
But, right.
Now we've added to our family. I just had my first grandson 4 weeks ago today. So I don't know that we're going to go anywhere. So that's me in a nutshell, professionally and personally. Married 25 years.
Amazing.
Yeah. Close family.
I want to go back for a second to your experience in the schools, mm-hmm. because as an active parent, and you know, PUSD may argue that I am kind of a pain in the ass. Okay, there's our first.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm one of those parents that partners with the teachers. Like I am, you know, constantly in talks and I always have been. It started out with an article that I wrote about the school starting and being stressed. And then I got on Joe Howard's radar mm-hmm. and he pulled me in like, what are you talking about? You know, he thought I was like this angry woman. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm sorry. I just want to help you.
Right.
Like, I just want to partner and do this. So that started almost 7 years ago. And through just being really involved in our community, you know, I see the kids and what they're struggling mm-hmm. with. And I mean, my heart breaks for them and I'm just on the outside.
Oh, yeah.
Like I lose sleep mm-hmm. over it, you know, and I can't imagine what it must have been like to be an educator at the college with older kids mm-hmm. and you know, hearing their stories, seeing what they're going through in relationships, mm-hmm. how they're just, you know, at that age, you're just trying to figure mm-hmm. it out. I mean, that must have been really hard for someone with your heart.
It's my favorite age.
Really?
Yes, because okay. there's so much promise and there's so much hope and there's so much opportunity. So yes, on one hand, it's hard. You see a lot of things. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I've had working in higher ed, I've worked as administrative support. I've worked as adjunct faculty. I've worked as an academic advisor. I've, you know, now I'm working in the counseling center at Embry-Riddle. So I've yeah. seen it from quite literally every vantage point one could see it from the financial struggle to the academic struggle to people returning to education after significant life events, you know, like a divorce or a death in the family or finishing chemo, like, you know, something changed and they needed to transition. And here they are. As mm-hmm. well as many of the psychology classes that I teach are for early college students. So I get a lot of the high school students. The majority of my class makeup is high school students. And I love them. They are, yes, it's heartbreaking. And also what an opportunity for positivity and influence and to teach them. You know, I was re-listening to the podcast that you did with Aaron. I think it was your second one.
Yeah.
Talking about the basics of self-care. That's what you were mentioning, yeah. like just going back to those basics and really for you at that point in your life, you were relearning the basics and for these young adults, they're sometimes learning them for the first time. And so for me, that's a cool opportunity to teach self-reflection and pausing and mindfulness and looking to community and finding your resources and being still. So some of this stuff it took you and I maybe further into adulthood to figure out, I get to talk to them on the front end. And it's so exciting because I am a mom, but I'm not their mom. And I'm not, you know, I don't bring the judgment into the space. Doesn't matter what space it is. I don't have any judgment. I just want to see them succeed. You know, I just get excited to hear what they're passionate about and to watch them flourish and grow. So yes, hard. And I think that if I were in the school system in itself, that's a whole different animal. And I did do that for a little while. Before I got to Yavapai, I did a year at a school, working in a special needs classroom and I always volunteered for the kids' classrooms and stuff. So there were things that I saw there that were certainly different and more challenging and probably very heartbreaking. But I think I've moved into an area where, I see a little bit more hope and promise and excitement, because people are discovering things about themselves in a totally different way. They have more control.
Yeah. And you know, how amazing is it too that you did something about what you saw?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you decided to show up. You were like, okay, I've been in this space. I've done this professionally. I want to do something about this. You know, I also want to enrich my life, but I want to create positive change. Yeah. And you showed up and you're doing that, right? You're giving them those basics and not just basics, but the inspiration and the safe space to explore their own psychology, their own, isms, you know, how they function and making it okay for them to show up as they are authentically. And then you get to guide them on how to be positive with that in their life instead of destructive.
Yes, empowering. That's what I love about it. It's empowering. Like, did you know that if we just tweaked your perspective a little bit, it might feel like this? You know, and getting them to see. So yes, like thinking back to those academic advising sessions when I would be sitting with people who were in tears or sharing very heavy things that I'm like, I'm an academic advisor. You know, I can help you plan your schedule, but I don't know how to walk you through that. Like I can hold this space, but I didn't know therapeutically, and you know, that wasn't appropriate. That was far beyond my scope, but those were the moments I lived for. Those were the moments being in the space with the people when it was the hardest. I got you.
Yeah.
I can do that. I don't know what else I can do, but when it's hard, I got you. And I'm right there. And to me, that is just a beautiful, beautiful thing to be a part of. It's such a tremendous honor. Such a tremendous honor.
Yeah, I mean, you can't leave Prescott.
Okay.
I mean, you can do your seminars globally and you can, you know, explore that side of your career and you can launch your own podcast if you don't have one and, you know, you can write your books and all of that. But yeah, you're just going to have to stay in the community for a little longer.
We don't have any plans to go anywhere. We should be okay for a little bit.
Yeah. Good, good. You know, personally, what I enjoy about you, like being in your space, the very little like passing moments that I get to be in your space, I never feel like it's Dr. Annabale dogma.
Good.
And I want to talk about that with you because, I mean, I've been in therapy off and on since I was 17. Mm-hmm. No, and I didn't start therapy at 17 for any other reason than the guy I was dating at the time was really into therapy and taking psychology in college and was like, you know, you should go explore that. Everybody should explore that. And And so I started therapy and I enjoyed it. And then I backed out of it. And then I got back into it. And, you know, so I've been around a lot of therapists and I've been around psychiatrists, and I've very seldom seen someone as confident in their approach as you without trying to like instill some kind of ego dogma. So as a therapist, how do you stay in that authentic space? Like, what are your ego guardrails, if you have any? Like, tell me about that. How do you keep yourself open in authenticity without putting your own perspective too much into things?
That's a great question. Well, first of all, what a tremendous compliment. Thank you. That was such a nice thing to say. Sure. I think a few things. Number one, I'm real clear about who I don't want to be. I'm real, real clear. I think working in higher ed for a long time and having support staff roles where I worked with people who had doctorates, who made sure you knew they had doctorates and that they were the most important person in the space and that you were less than. No. I did this for me because it made good sense for me in terms of my long-term goals. It made sense. I love psychology. I love psychology so much. I love it so much that it made such good sense. Like, I knew I was going to want a terminal degree in that because I love it so much. And so it was like, okay, well, that's what this means because that's what it looks like. I could really truly care less about the title. It's not even something I really identify with. But I love having the skills and the ability to support it. I love having the education and the knowledge and the resources to be able to pull into the therapeutic space. So I think those are pieces of it.
Would you say this line into?
No,
sorry to interrupt
go.
You, but was your career path at that point a form of self-care?
Oh, I believe so. I don't think I saw it at that time. Mm-hmm. Like, I just knew I wanted something a little bit more. And when I sat and I thought about long-term what I wanted career-wise,
yeah,
this fit the bill. Like, this was it. It was in alignment. Through the process, oh my God. Like, I'm a totally different human than I was 7 years ago. When, is it 7 years ago? 8 years ago? Whenever this all started, I'm a completely different person, you know? And it turned out to be very much about the self-care. It was healing. It was, yeah, I don't know. I could go on for days, but yes. It was very much self-care for me. So, and I think I hadn't, you know, again, thinking back to the podcast that you did where you had to relearn everything, you know, that you liked poached eggs. Yeah. And that, like, I had, so I went from, I'm the oldest of four, and my youngest brother's 13 years younger than me. I went from that straight into a marriage, straight into a pregnancy, straight into a divorce. Oh. Straight into another marriage and two more babies, all before the age of 24.
Oh my God, your frontal lobe was not even developed.
No. So impulsivity much? Like, okay. So when we talk about attention deficit and impulsivity, we may have a little bit of that happening here. And yes. So anyway, there was a lot happening. That all to be said, I didn't know what I liked. I was always caretaking. I didn't know what I wanted. Yeah. And, you know, God bless my husband, who's always looking out for me, going, well, what do you want? What would you like to do? What do you feel? Uh-huh. I mean, like, thank goodness that he thought to stop and ask, because I was never thinking to stop and ask. So this moment in my mid-30s when I was like, I think I want to go to school to be a psychologist, was really the first time that I paused to stop and go, what do I want for me? Yeah. What would feel good for me? So then going into your question about the ego, the guardrails for ego, I have a real clear sense of when my ego is showing up. And like I can feel it. Like you just saw it on my face. Like she gets a little feisty and a little fussy about things. And it's only, I don't like the whole better than less than thing. It just, I'm not in this for better than. I'm really not. Like we all have tremendous skills, gifts, and abilities. And I think the mm-hmm. one thing you learn, and if you don't learn this, you're really missing out. The more education you have, the more you realize you don't know everything. Like the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know. And so, but there are some people that don't get that. And so for me, I think in some ways I feel dumber. Like I feel like I know less than I did, but but I appreciate and I feel really solid and rooted in what I do know. So I guess circling back to my point, I'm not interested in an ego match ever. I am a cheerleader and a lifter upper. I love women. I love lifting up women. I don't get women who don't lift up women. Like you're gorgeous. I'm gorgeous. You're smart. I'm smart. Like, why can't we all do that? Like more for us, right. You know, like it just, when you have something awesome that you bring to the table, I get to learn from that. And that's so exciting to me. So really the only time I feel my ego kind of like rear its ugly head is when I feel somebody bringing it to the table, like when it's rising to the occasion, mm-hmm. like they're in it for the pissing match. And I'm like, okay. And I have to.
You're like, I just had a whole bunch of water. I can piss much longer than you.
I got this. I'm part, I'm 34% German. We could do this all day. Like, So. But I don't like that. And I know that feeling in my body. And so more often than not now, I feel it rise and I pause and I just sit with it and I go, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And I just also, I think having compassion for people, everybody likes to feel knowledgeable. Everybody wants to feel like they have a sense of something to contribute and value. And I see that. And so now, maybe not so much in my younger years, but now I see it as something entirely different. It, you know, compassion comes with that. So the guardrails are the noticing that something is rising up in me, and then I have to pause and take a breath and bring in the compassion. I just bring in the compassion and go, let them have it. It's okay. Let them have it.
Yeah.
It's all right. They know things. What could you learn here, Andrea? You could learn something here, you know? So anyway, but I don't ever want people to leave my space feeling less than. Like, why would I be doing this job then? Like, I'm in the wrong career field if you're going to leave my space feeling bad about yourself. Like, that is just not... That's not for me. I want people to feel good. I want... The stigma of therapy is that it's so heavy and sad and depressing, and it doesn't have. We can talk about some real serious stuff and have a good time.
Yeah,
because that's the beauty of life. I think that's on my webpage. It's the both and of life that I love so much, that it can be so serious and so silly at the same time.
I like that.
Yeah,
I like the acknowledgement of the positive and negative. You know, the light and the dark. Mm. And I think a lot of people are afraid to do the shadow work. Mm-hmm. You know, they're afraid of the ego. I will say this though, like it does take a healthy ego to be able to do what you do, or like for me to be able to write my columns.
Oh yeah.
Because at some point I've told myself, well, I'm gonna do it.
Right. It's kind of,
and my advice is good enough to give to someone else.
That's right. That's right.
So, and whether that was just born out of frustration or who knows, but you know, one of the things I do is I meditate first and I pray. Mm-hmm. And I ask for the space for me to get out mm-hmm. of the way.
Yes.
Right. And then I just trust, all right, if I get out of the way and I take a breath and I relax, mm-hmm. you know, and I listen to my playlist and I get out of my mm-hmm. head about what I think I should sound right. like or what I think, you know, our audience wants to listen to. Cause I had like a whole bunch of questions and different things. And then I was like, okay, we're going to let this go. We're just mm-hmm. going to talk. That helps me with my mm-hmm. ego. But yeah, ego is a fun thing.
It is a fun thing and it's fun to watch and it's fun to be aware of. And I love that you take a moment to pray and step out of the way. I do that a lot, especially with complex cases where I'm just like,
oh yeah,
I'm at a loss. I need something bigger than me to tell me what to do because it's not going. Like I'm here. I'm showing up. I'm doing the work. I'm willing, but yeah. I don't have all the answers, and I'm acutely aware of that all the time. So it's part that, and then another part is a lot of me holding my breath and going, well, I guess we'll see how this goes, you know? So like when you were talking about writing the column, like to me, that terrifies me. I so love that you do that. In fact, like putting together a website and a social media just makes me sick. Like I don't want to, but it was a whole lot of holding my breath and going, well, we're just going to roll with it. And people are either going to like it or not. And if they don't, okay, cool. If it resonates with someone, awesome. You know, but this is me. And I think that's what allows for the authenticity. I'm just going to show up as me. Sometimes it's mm-hmm. serious. Sometimes it's somber. Sometimes it's ridiculous. Sometimes there's swearing. Sometimes there's not. Like, you're just going to get what you get. And that's either cool with you or it's not. And I've been that way my entire life. So.
Yeah. I can see that. Did you wear in high school?
Say that again.
Did you wear Doc Martens in high school?
No, because I couldn't afford them.
I know, they're so expensive.
But I wanted them so bad.
Well, you should buy yourself some now.
I should. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Go get your Docs.
All my best friends had Docs. And I just could not. I mean, I was the oldest of four. I couldn't. And with a baby brother, we just couldn't afford them. And so I remember being so proud of myself when I got my first job and I could afford a pair of $60 Vans. I thought I was a big deal. I thought I was a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah.
That is a big deal. $60 Vans.
They're beautiful.
You know, still a big deal today. What kind did you get?
They were black velvet with you could see like flowers. Like there was this underlying floral pattern. I loved them.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah, I loved them. I wore them to death. But yeah, anyway.
That's really cool.
The Doc people. So what were your questions? Now I'm curious.
Golly. What? We're not talking about shoes? Well,
no, we could totally talk about shoes. I have a shoe problem.
I mean, I'm a big fan of like fun mm-hmm. shoes, but yeah. Okay. What was I going to talk? Well, I was meandering through a few threads mm-hmm. and I'll read them off to you and feel free to just interrupt me and jump in if one of them feels good for you. So I am a super sensitive person. Mm-hmm. I am a Pisces. I own that. You know, I've got the ADHD. I'm, you know, a constant work in progress and I'm totally cool with mm-hmm. that. But I feel a lot.
Oh yeah.
So much so that I have to take myself off of social media. I cannot watch what's going on in the Middle East. I cannot watch what's going on in Ukraine. It's like I can snip it with NPR as I'm like going around town. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as somebody starts talking about something that's like too traumatic and triggering for me, like I have to flip mm-hmm. the can't do it. So I was going to ask you if in your educational travels and just working with people the way that you do, and such a diverse cross section of people, like from children to adults and everywhere in between. What do you think about the idea of cosmic consciousness, the idea that our energy and our connection to people is not separate, and regardless of how well we try to shield ourselves from like the onslaught of social media or whatever it is, that we are going to feel a collective world emotion? Yes.
So the answer is yes to that. So, okay. So you've been on the website and there's a brief blurb about why I named my business One Psychological Services. And it's the connection between, it didn't occur to me that there might've been some sort of religious connotation until I'd filed the LLC, but that wasn't it at all. What it was the oneness.
I'm like punching your website right now. Like where is
it's brief. It's on the front. It's on the very first page. And it doesn't even, I couldn't even do it justice. Like it took me 9 months to figure out how do I describe this? But let me say that when I'm teaching in class, I'm forever talking about the oneness of the body. There's no separation between physical and mental health. It is health. And I would love for our medical community to embrace that, you know, but to say that, you know, one thing doesn't cause the other is okay. Moving on. So,
I mean, there's some science there. There's a lot of that science we both studied.
There's
really supports all of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's all connected. And I teach that a lot. And also, I think particularly through COVID, when this came to light, this is, I guess, when it came to light most for me was the collective feeling.
Yes.
And sense. And so cosmic energy that connects us all, oneness. We are one. We are one. Mm-hmm. We are one with each other. We are one with our planet. We are one within ourselves. You know, we are one within our units. So that's how I view it. Now, I understand not everybody sees it that way, but I just feel like we do ourselves a disservice when we don't take all the pieces into consideration. And I understand that some people have to function that way. It's how they get through life. They need to compartmentalize. They're just not there yet. Maybe they won't be. But in terms of the work that I do, it's everything is connected. It's all connected. And that, yes, that energy is very real. I've always said, like, if I could just feel 30 to 50% less on any given day, I might be able to breathe. Mm-hmm. You know, and so those are things that I have to be really aware of in session. You know, boundary work's been really helpful for me. I have to remind myself sometimes those aren't your feelings to feel. You weren't given permission to feel those feelings. Your job is to sit here and to hold space while they feel the feelings, not for you to feel the feelings. And then I go, oh, okay. You know, my other part inside of me goes, oh, okay.
I'm gonna use
just
that,
be still.
By the way.
Yeah. It's been really helpful, you know, allowing for people to be angry in my presence. I love peace and harmony. I'm all about the peace and harmony. And so when people have very strong emotions, it throws me off a little bit. And I used to be really conflict avoidant and conflict averse, and I've learned how to navigate it. So I'm not so much now. It's like, okay, bring me what you got. You know, I can handle this. This is you're just feeling feelings, and it's okay for you to feel feelings. And I might be on the wrong end of that. And I can decide when to advocate for myself, but maybe you just need to feel some things for a moment. And so let's be with that. And I've learned to allow for that without it like blasting me. I think before it used to feel like a gut punch every time somebody felt anything that I would consider uncomfortable. And now it's like, no, those actually aren't your feelings to feel. You have your own feelings to feel, and you get to decide how to respond to that. So I've got this really sweet little coach who's very kind and direct on the inside. Uh-huh. You know, I have one that's super gushy and validating, and then the other one that's just like, get your ass out of bed and get moving. You know, she's just very like, knock it off. You've cried about this long enough. You know, like And she's right. not necessarily mean or degrading, but it's after the other two have come in, like, voices to try to, like,
those are your Viking ancestors yelling
yeah,
at you.
Yeah, that it's just like, hey, yeah. come on, it's time. Yeah, you've wallowed in this long enough. And I'm like, all right, fine. Anyway, I sound psychotic, but I'm not.
That's no, funny. I get it. Like,
yeah.
I had a yoga studio, you know, before I had children. Mm-hmm. And even after I had children, I continued to teach yoga. And I never drank so much wine mm-hmm. in my life. Mm-hmm. Because it wasn't just yoga class. And it wasn't just one class. Yeah. I was teaching several classes. And then I was teaching individual mm-hmm. classes. And I had not learned how to do that, yeah. right? Let go of things and hold space without taking things home. And of course, with yoga, you are like working in that energetic yes. body field a lot. So it's really difficult mm-hmm. to shut yourself off from your client, right. you know, inevitably end up being your friends. And so like the boundaries are,
yeah.
I don't even know, you know, if I were to do it again, coming at it at this age, I have an idea of the guardrails I would set up for mm-hmm. myself. But, you know, eventually I had to decide, like, was I going to teach yoga and also mom and also, you know, well, I was teaching karate at the same time, but that was a little easier. I finally gave the yoga mm-hmm. up because I wasn't doing well.
Yeah.
I couldn't be in that yeah. space. And I thought about going back to school and becoming, you know, a therapist mm-hmm. and actually doing this probably more responsibly. Mm-hmm. I mean, to those that listen, I do educate myself. I read endless articles and whatnot. But, you know, again, I am not educated in that regard.
Mm. You're very right. educated. It's a different, it's yeah. a, it's a paper. It's a,
it, I yeah, know, it's but a paper. It's also kind of like getting your black belt.
Yeah. Back. Yeah. Okay. I can see that.
You know, like you have to, when you're in karate and you get your black belt, a lot of just getting to black is consistency and showing
and
up
discipline.
And, yeah. And the discipline of dealing with like physical trauma, mm-hmm. right? So you have to get used to being hit and to not be afraid of getting hit and to learn like what a meaningful dialogue is between you and your partner. And you have to get used to that confrontation. Right. And just like, you know, you were saying, like you realize you don't know anything at all once you get to mm-hmm. that point. By the time I got to black, I realized like, oh my God, I know nothing. Mm-hmm. I never want to fight anybody ever. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hurt people. I don't, right. you know, like I want to be a custodian of this knowledge
right.
and whatnot. So it was interesting because I was able to have those boundaries when I was teaching karate, I think because it was more confrontational, mm. but like the soft stuff,
yeah,
that was harder. And
I think that makes sense because it's, you have to be guarded and boundaried when it's hard. Like you have, you know, people are
yeah.
coming at you. But so.
And I prefer that. Yes. I prefer that.
Yeah.
If I can see it. Mm-hmm.
It's very cut and dried. It's very yeah. black and white. It's very easy to spot when you need to defend yeah. yourself and protect yourself, but when it's loose and gentle and easy, it's,
and it slips mm-hmm. to the side.
Whoa. Yes.
mm-hmm. No.
Yep. And I can feel it now. Like that same sense, that knowing that knows when my ego's about to rear her ugly okay. head goes, yeah. There's a shift in the disturbance. Like there's a disturbance in the boundary, you know, like there's something's not right there yeah. and that doesn't feel super good. So I'm going to pay attention to that, you know?
Yeah.
But I think before when I was younger, I had the discernment, but I dismissed it because I thought I was overreacting or just be the bigger person yeah. or, you know, just be friendly. They're just being nice. Why are you acting weird? And it's like, well, Andrea, you're acting weird because that's weird. Like you're sensing something is off. Your gut is telling you. You have brain cells in your gut. It's literally telling you to follow and pay attention, and you're, you know, not paying attention. So I pay attention.
Tell me about brain cells.
Brain cells
in the
brain
gut.
Cells in the gut.
We're kind of going all over the place, but it's good stuff because I've heard that we have brain cells. Wait, our children's brain cells in our own brain.
Okay.
Right?
No.
From carrying them, somehow they got up there.
I'm not
okay.
Sure.
I still have to research that more.
Yeah.
And then most recently, I've been on a journey to heal my gut because of, you know, I have celiac and before I was diagnosed celiac, like you wouldn't have recognized me. I was borderline schizophrenic. I mean, really, like I couldn't make a good decision on a good day. And then we found out that I had celiac, and cutting the gluten out almost like completely gave me like the breath I needed to at that point. Right. That's when I started to teach myself, like kind of reparent myself as I was moving along, the basic needs of self-care. But like, I was totally instinct based up until that point. And so I've been learning about the gut and how the gut is connected to the brain. So talk about that.
Well, I can't talk about it as knowledgeably as somebody who studies it all the time. So my remembrance is vague recollection from my dissertation, but I know serotonin, which is a really key neurotransmitter that we need to feel good, that and it helps us to sleep. It does all kinds of things that forms in your gut. And so if your gut health is not on track, you're going to have difficulty creating serotonin, which is something that your brain needs. I have also read, like I read a book once in undergrad written by, I think it's called Lead from the Heart or something like that. It was a leadership book. And he talked about there being brain cells in your heart. And
what?
I know
they're everywhere.
Well, here's the thing.
Google it. I'm Googling
what I'm
going
to say is that we know the vagus nerve runs throughout your entire body, which is connected to your nervous system, which is connected to your gut and to your heart, right? So it makes sense to me that whether there are actual brain cells living in those things. And again, like I'm not a medical doctor, so, you know, I'm pulling things together here, but it makes sense to me that if our nervous system, if this vagus nerve connects everything in our body, there's no reason we wouldn't have intuition, things that signal to our brain occurring in our gut and occurring in our heart and our midsection. You know, if we look at this a different way, mental health issues, stress, for example, results in heart palpitations, heart attacks, heart disease, IBS, you know, chronic inflammatory disease throughout the body. So
I have all of that.
Yeah, I know. Lots of us
love it. Oh my
God. Lots of us do. Because we're just so stressed and overworked and over caffeinated and under, you know, under napped. So
oh my God.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe saying that there are brain cells in each of those areas is an overstatement, but it is curious and I think it is worth exploring. And I do recall the research on serotonin being formed in your gut, because that is actually in my paper. So it's important.
I'm doing intermittent fasting and I'm doing about like an 85-15 on it, really. So about 85% of the time I'm fasting and I'm breaking my fast with bone broth. Mm-hmm. You know, to get that, the glycine, I think is the protein that you need in your gut to create the serotonin. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed a good difference in my energy and in just brain fog. But you know, I am ashamed to admit, I don't really know the difference between serotonin and dopamine.
Okay. So don't be ashamed to admit it. The only reason I know it is because I had to study it.
I know.
And
it's so cool.
Tell me. I'm probably going to have to like Google it to give you accurate descriptions. But dopamine has to do with the reward system in the brain. And serotonin has to do with mood and sleep, I believe. That's all I'm going to go into without Googling because, but each of the neurotransmitters, like GABA is in charge of relaxation. So, and, you know, calming your nervous system. Norepinephrine is that adrenaline surge. So all of these neurotransmitters, it's like a whole sciencey lock and key situation, you know, that happens in your brain. So as these neurotransmitters are either created or maybe not created enough, it impacts the way that our brains function and the way that the medications work. It's either to allow for creation of more of the neurotransmitter that you need or not. So that's my not very sciencey.
No, I dig it. That's fine.
Explanation. No, I mean, I'm so sorry for the people listening going, really, she's got a doctorate. Look, this is not my area of expertise, but.
I mean, you're not a fucking encyclopedia.
I am not.
There it is.
I'm not. A year ago, I would have been because I was studying for my licensing exam and I could have rattled it off like this. But at this point, I'm 47. I've had COVID. I'm very tired. I can't remember at all. And we have Google. You know what I mean? Like, I just can't.
I don't worry about it because this show is for real.
I love that so much.
And yeah, you know, you don't have to rattle off the white papers for us because it's boring shit anyways.
It is. Well, do you know who's good for that? Do you listen to the Huberman Lab at all?
No.
Andrew Huberman out of Stanford. If you want to get into the sciencey stuff, he's the guy to follow. But the reason that came to mind was because you were talking about the intermittent fasting, and I think he just had a podcast on the benefit of intermittent fasting for regrowing the gut lining and what it does to help with that reestablishment and formation of neurotransmitters. So it was right in alignment with what you were telling me. That's why that came to mind. They're really awesome. Science packed in a fun way, but they're a time commitment. So if you're short on time, then
yeah, I love neuroscience.
Yeah.
My coach, so I am not in therapy per se, but I have an executive coach. And for those listening, you know, basically what she does for me is she works with neuroscience. So she's a yogi that does a lot of brain hacks. And I was going to say something about that, but neuroscience. So that's how she coaches me. So it'll be like, you know, the thing in the Middle East. Okay, Britt, I want you to write down on a piece of paper how you feel about it. And then you can choose to either carry it with you or leave it on your desk. And it stops my brain from like hamster spinning nonstop, and it just gets me out of that loop, and it gives me power and control over like how I'm feeling and the choice of being able to carry the sorrow, you know, that I feel there or not. So I love neuroscience, and my goal this year is to become a better student of it. Because I've had good success there. I mean, I love therapy. I don't love being unwound through
Well, and I would argue therapy looks a lot of different ways. So I believe that what you are doing is very therapeutic. And, you know, just because the title is coach doesn't mean it's not therapeutic, doesn't mean it's not beneficial. Yeah. And that's a message that I love to get across to my new clients is this could look any number of ways. It does not have to be the unwinding on the couch. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. Do you want to go there? I know that there are some people, their theoretic orientations are theoretical orientations mm-hmm. are very much like, well, we got to get to the root of the trauma. We got to get to the root of the things. We got to, you know, dive in and pull it all apart. And it's like, yeah, if the person's ready, but if they're not ready, how are we re-traumatizing? And again, I mean, that's my personal opinion and experience. I just don't think that therapy has to look as intense as it sometimes does. Sometimes it's really, really useful. I mean, I've experienced mm-hmm. it and I've enjoyed it, but other times it's lighter and easier and more coachy. And it, to me, that's just as valuable as the times when I've been undone and had to put myself back together. So you're doing good work.
I've enjoyed both. Thank mm-hmm. you. Yeah. I mean, I've enjoyed both. For what I went through prior to turning 30, I had to go back to the root because for me, I had to see that I had responsibility in everything that had occurred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
However ugly, however much I wanted to blame other people or circumstances or whatever, I had to go back and rebuild my moral compass mm-hmm. or build one.
Right.
Because I had never done it. I had never needed to. You know, I grew up in affluent Pasadena. Mm-hmm. I went to private schools. Yeah, I had like, you know, your regular trauma that kids go through in schools and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was bad. I was the fat redhead and horribly teased for years and years and years. I was supremely overweight. Mm-hmm. And, you know, back in the 80s, that was not fun. There was no inclusion back then. You know, and that translated into my first marriage, and I carried a lot of that with me. And so when I was 30 and I was divorced and I went into therapy, you know, that's when I went diving into it. What was nice about that time with my therapist then was we did a lot of artwork. Mm-hmm. So I imagine what she did was found someone that had never worked with her inner child.
Yeah.
And so she allowed me to be like this inner mm-hmm. child and like work with Play-Doh and draw things out. And, you know, how does that experience feel to you? Like what color comes to mind? Like, okay, you're traumatized. What color do you need to put into your piece to create warmth and comfort? And she was also a stickler. She'd be like, okay, well you chose to stay in those situations, mm-hmm. you know? But now at the stage in my life where I feel that I do take responsibility mm-hmm. for myself, having the coach that's just able to say, all right, you're in a loop. We need to get you out of it. That using that neuroscience mm-hmm. is helpful.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, because I am a neurothinker.
Yeah.
So,
and I think that's a great point. You being at a point in your life where you needed to figure it out and take some ownership. To me, that's the key though. You were at a point in your mm-hmm. life where you were ready for that. And
rock bottom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, it was. Yeah. And that's time to do that work. When someone comes to you and they go, look, I'm at rock bottom. Yes. But does that mean everybody that walks into your space requires that type of depth and intensity? Nope. Not necessarily. You know, they, at least for me, I need to know where they're at so that I can meet them there. Because if they're not there and I'm diving in deeper, that's going to do a whole lot of damage. Could do a whole lot of damage. So I want to be thoughtful about pacing and the mm-hmm. depth of work. And then naturally, as things become more comfortable, it's easy to go deeper. I mean, not everybody comes in at rock bottom. Some people do though, and they just dive right in and I'm like, okay, let's do this. And it feels like I love those sessions. I feel like I never did martial arts, but I can only imagine that it feels like what a good sparring match would feel like afterwards, where you just I'm just making assumptions. I don't know, but for me, like I feel exhilarated and like sharp and focused and kind of on fire. Yeah. Like that was a real battle there. What did you get out of that? You know what?
Yeah.
And then to be able to like regroup at the end of session when they're like, wow, that was a lot. I'm like, yeah, that was a lot, you know, like, and just kind of debriefing a little bit, but we can do that. I think when I was first in practicum, I'm like, what happens if people leave in tears? And that has happened maybe less than a handful of times in the years that I've been doing this, because almost always we're able to wrap it up and go and talk about, wow, that was a lot. What, you know, like, what are you noticing? What came up for you? What did you pull from that? How are you feeling? What are you seeing in your body? You know, how is that different than what you came in with? And just sort of pulling it apart and normalizing and humanizing, like, yeah, I'm kind of wiped, you know, like, okay, so how are you going to take care of yourself? What are you going to eat after this? Do you have time to stop for a walk or grab a coffee or meet with a friend, you know? So anyway, they're intense moments, but they're good. I don't know how I spiraled off that way, but here we are.
No, I like it. I mean, you know, in, at least in Kempo, we call that meaningful dialogue. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of rules on the mats about control. And hopefully by the time, you know, you're in your browns and blacks, your control is pretty good. Mm-hmm. So that then it becomes fun.
Yeah.
You know, usually you're working with someone that you know, because you've gone through the ranks together, and you're going back and forth and you are making contact, but it's a meaningful contact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can feel the spirit too of, like, when you get hit, you can feel the intention mm-hmm. behind it, which is fascinating. Meaningful dialogue and being exhilarated. And I miss that mm-hmm. actually, but I get a lot of that through doing mm-hmm. this. So I feel like I had to feed that, you know, of being useful and having meaningful dialogue and connecting in that way. So I enjoy doing this because I get to connect mm-hmm. with you mm-hmm. and, you know, with guests and people in my community and bring out, like, their awesome mm-hmm. stuff.
It's the awesome like, stuff. It's so fun.
Mm-hmm. It is fun. It's fun. Okay. So we're coming up on almost an hour, and it's crazy because it goes so mm-hmm. fast. And we don't have to stop at an hour, but I want to just be conscious of going into other stuff. So I did want to touch on, okay, so self-care for therapists. So we've kind of been dancing around that a little mm-hmm. bit. What do you do for self-care?
Yeah.
And do you have a therapist?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it's a little reckless for therapists to not have therapists. And that's my bias.
Yeah.
Everybody's a little bit different. I will say that, you know, there are times in my life when I've needed my therapist more than what I need her now. But that's part of my self-care routine. So what do I do for self-care? I think it's that knowing about yourself and recognizing what works and what doesn't work. So I'm kind of like, the way I view life is one big buffet and I just want all of it. And that gets me in trouble with boundaries because I end up saying yes more than what I realistically have time for. So self-care to me looks like paying attention to when I'm saying yes too much, being real clear about that knowing and that hesitation that comes up, and paying attention when I get a gut feeling going, hey, you need to pay attention to that. It's advocating for myself when I feel like things aren't quite right. It's being at a place in my life where I can finally ask for help and for what I need. I'm still not fabulous at it. Again, oldest of four children. Like, I did a lot of caretaking. I'm
work in progress.
Work in progress. I'm not great at asking for help, but I'm like, I was so proud of myself last year. My kids, my daughter and my daughter-in-law offered to make Christmas dinner for me because I was doing something else. And I was like, yeah, I can do that. I can let other people make the lasagna. Why do I have to make the lasagna? But it's little things like that. So it's knowing my limits, knowing my weaknesses. And then I like variety. So it's not the same thing all the time. You know, it's cyclically it's exercise. I really do love exercise when I do it, but right now I'm cold and it's dark and I don't want to. So I'm not going to make myself. And when the sun starts coming out a little bit earlier in March, exercise and I will be friends again and my body will be on fire and very mad at me that I haven't moved it, but it's just how we live and it's okay. It's nourishing, you know, like having a good balance of things that are good for me as well as things that I just enjoy, but not doing too much of any of the things. It's checking in, making sure that my physical health is taken care of, you know, hitting that fun age where hormones are all over the place and you feel like garbage and you can't figure out why. And it's like, oh, okay, well, let's go get that taken care of. And I have, and, shout out to Kim. She's amazing. Kim Bailey, who has just gotten me all taken care of.
She's my doctor
too. Yeah. I think that's how we were introduced actually.
I think it is. Yeah. Yeah. I get my shots. I get my testosterone shot. I get like the glutathione shot. I do like a lipo B.
Yep. My vitamins. Shot. I get my vitamins and my D. All of those. She just took super. You should have her on here. That would be so fun.
I've asked her. Okay. I've asked her. She's like, well, what kind of podcast is it? I'm like, well, you're going to have to listen to it. They said, you know, but I think her perspective on hormone therapy and caring for women in general is just amazing. Yeah,
I'm so grateful for her.
Yeah. I'm doing the Wegovy. It's like an Ozempic offshoot. I do a super low dose to help me with IBS.
Oh, wow.
And it's been phenomenal because my gut, you know, as a celiac has just been jacked because I was so late in my diagnosis. Yeah. So just these low doses of that shot have been profoundly helpful in like energy and digestion. Yeah. And I would have never been able to take advantage of that if she weren't around, you know,
she's so incredible.
But we have some incredible providers in our area.
We really do.
We really do. Like you are an incredible provider. You know, you Thank are. You. And she is an incredible provider. And, you know, the people at the Launchpad are incredible providers. Yeah. And you've done work over there too. So tell me a little bit about what next year looks like in the community.
For me? Or just in general?
Yeah. I mean, I know you're at Riddle.
Yeah, so. I don't know what next year is going to look like in terms of the community. I'm playing with some ideas. I'd really like to get trained in neurofeedback. I'd like to be able to add additional non-medicinal stuff to the things that I do. I don't know. And I'm kind of, I think the first couple years of being in private practice, I felt really focused on building a practice and trying to figure out my professional identity because everybody seems to have a thing like right out the gate. And I, again, life's a buffet. Like I just want to do all of it, but it's not, you can't really.
Your branding is great though, by the
Say
way.
Say what?
I mean, your branding is incredible.
Oh, thank you.
Like I'm looking at it and you know, one of these days I'm going to make mine look better, but yours looks beautiful.
Thank you.
And your messaging.
Thank you. The photographs, a friend of mine, is a master photographer and she said, let me gift this to you. And I was like, yes, thank you. I mean, she's incredible, like internationally renowned and amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. So, my house is just, we're very well photographed because she's incredible and generous. So that was, that was a gift. And I feel grateful to have received that. And the, you know, trying to figure out who I am and what I wanted to do and how I wanted to market kind of what I do was a real challenge for a long time. So I think I felt so stressed by all of the businessy things and the shoulding, you know, like.
Shoulding. Shoulding all over.
Shoulding. The masturbating. Have you heard that one? Yeah, shoulding and masturbating. Yes, Albert Ellis. We can thank him for those gems.
The masturbating.
Yeah, it was just all over the place. I finally got to where I was like, you know, I think I'm done being on this particular hamster wheel, and I'm going to do something else for a little while. So in comes Riddle.
Yeah.
it just fell in my lap. I'm like, I know I love this work, so we're going to do that for a while. In 2024, yeah. I'm not really married to anything. I know I love what I do. I love what I do. And whether it's with kids or teens or adults or people who are close to retirement, like I love my clients, like genuinely. It feels like such an honor to be able to do this work. So I think I'm just going to be still and present and see what happens. I know that on my wish list of things would be to have the neurofeedback training, to be able to have more time to be embedded in the community, to do a little bit more work. I haven't been able to work with the launch pad in a long time, and I would love to be able to go back to that. So we'll just see, just trying to settle and simmer after feeling like I've been on a hamster wheel for a while, and just allowing myself to be present in the work that I'm doing without requiring too much of myself, I guess, if that makes any sense, which is part of the self-care. You know, it's part of the self-care, like going, okay, what have you been doing and how do you want it to look a little bit different? And where can I give myself a break and have a little bit of self-compassion and treat myself as gently as I treat everybody else, you know? So I want to say the last thing is community. Like I feel like it would be, for me specifically, very remiss to not mention my community as part of my self-care, because I have an awesome community of people and support just between friends and family. And I'm not like, you don't need abundance to have community, you know, like one or two people is a good community for you. And I feel like, because I've been here for so long, I definitely have a nice handful of people that are just, they're great. They're good. So that is also self-care for me.
That's awesome. Yeah. That is good. Yeah. I am hoping to workshop the fuck jar.
Yes.
So that's on my list. And I, you know, I'm kind of stuck in that branding situation as well, which is funny for me. I've always had like six jobs, you know, so like my 9 to 5, I'm a comms manager. I do graphics design and branding all day and strategy all day for some very large brands. And I love it because it's creative and it keeps my mind sharp. And then at the same time, I love exploring self-care and I love just being there for people and allowing them to explore their authenticity. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not sure if I'm a coach. I think I'm more of like a motivational speaker.
I think it can be both.
I don't know. You know, like I thought like, well, do I want to do that whole thing, you know, where you see like 9 million ads about it? You know, the coaching person that's going to, and then I think about the social responsibility of that. It's like, well, yeah, you know, I could do that, but where is the education there, and how responsible is it to just go ramrodding through the community, you know, coaching people when you really don't have a solid background, like in neuroscience? Mm-hmm. So
I think it depends on how you want to coach, because I remember feeling very much like that. And I took, before I did this, I took an International Coaching Federation course and like had everything set up to be able to get certified and was like, no, I still want to go deeper. But I have a friend who's incidentally married to the fabulous photographer who is a coach, and he does financial and business coaching, and it's perfect, you know, like it's perfect for him. So I think it depends on really where your passion is and how deep you want to go into it and what you want that to look like, you know, and if you feel secure in the boundaries, you know, if you have any concern. For me, I had concern, I would want to get out of my lane and go straight into the psychologist's lane. And so coaching was not going to be a certification that was going to, like, I knew I wanted more than what coaching would do for me. But for other people, they're like, no, I'm good. Like I like this. I can do this. I can stay within these parameters and it works great for them. So I think it depends on what you want.
I think I want to, you know, because of my extensive marketing background and brand, and also the martial arts and the yoga, I think what I want to do is do the seminars, you know, like help people focus their chaos down to the things that matter via the fuck jar, and then dive into the things that matter and expose that, like pull that lens out. Like, okay, those four things that are in your jar, let's look at your career. Let's look at what you're doing. Let's look at your websites. Let's look at your socials. Let's get you in touch with a good photographer. Let's get you set up with an awesome therapist. Let's get you set up with an awesome doctor. And what I would like to do is be able to pull resources from people that I trust and know, and be able to give these people over to that.
Yeah, you know, be part of this.
And then just there you go. Next.
Yes. You know? Yes. I love that.
Move it along. It's like, okay, you're struggling with this. I can help you with this, that, and the other thing. This wonderful person can help you with those things. And, you know, go on your track. And yeah, I think that's more what I want to do.
That sounds exciting.
But I think it'd be fun. But, you know, I have nothing but respect for you guys that are like in the trenches, boots on the ground, doing the psychology work that you're doing. I mean, it's just, and I know firsthand just how powerful and how meaningful and effective you are in that. So anybody that's listening, if you're in the Prescott area and you are looking for a therapist that's actually going to treat you like a human being, and it's fun. I mean, you've got like crafts and all kinds of cool stuff to do. I would encourage you to check out Dr. Andrea Annibale.
Thank you.
Are you taking new clients? But before I tell people to go see you.
Yeah, I mean, case by, yes and no. It kind of, it fluctuates depending on time. At this point, yeah, I think I am. I've got a few spaces open. I would say always reach out, because here's the thing. Like, I will respond. I will point you in the right direction. If you need a phone call to talk, like I, you know, can do 15-minute consultations. Mention, if you decide to reach out, mention that you, you know, heard me on the podcast. I would be happy to schedule a phone call with you. If I'm not taking new clients, I will see who I can partner you with, you know, because part of being in this community is knowing people. So, it's a small community. We all know each other.
Really,
so if I'm not taking people, I'd be happy to connect you with somebody that is, or that would be a good fit, because fit is the thing that makes therapy work. Has to be a good
thing. I like
thing.
That. Yeah. And so would you suggest to people that if they meet with a therapist or they meet with a psychiatrist and they don't vibe with them, is that a gut instinct time to like move on? Or is it better to like get into the therapy and then kind of also look for someone else that you might vibe with? Or is that just a personal choice?
I think it's a yes and. So okay. Sometimes we meet people and we go, that's a hell no. That is an absolute hell no. I'm not doing that again. Okay, pay attention to that.
Yeah.
Sometimes we meet people and we go, I'm not sure about that. And we give it a time or two and we go, actually, yeah, they're really cool. Because therapy is such hard work, I'd say give it 2 or 3 sessions. You know, first session, at least for me, first session for me is you come in and I ask you a million questions. So you don't really get to know, I mean, you'll get to know my conversational style and that I like to keep it light and very conversational. But I ask the background questions, but we don't dive into therapy until the second or third session. So if you decided off after the first session that you didn't like me, valid, but also you might feel differently the second or third session. But usually by the third session, you have a pretty good feel of whether or not you're connecting with someone. So if you're just kind of on the fence and you're not sure, sometimes that's the discomfort of the therapeutic process. It's like you're uncomfortable, your anxiety's already heightened. Share that with your therapist. Like I know for me, I've had people who are willing to be vulnerable and I'm like, hold my touch points for a minute. Let's see if some bilateral stimulation will help calm you down. And they go, oh, okay. I didn't know that was an option. Or I'll say, would you prefer to go for a walk? Oh, I didn't know that was an option. So if you're not comfortable, be willing to vocalize to your therapist, I'm feeling really anxious right now. Is there anything that we can do to help manage that? And if there is, they'll let you know, and that might help you know whether or not it's a you thing or a therapist thing, if that makes any sense.
That is a very generous mindset.
Yeah.
I just have to say, because I think you're the first therapist or the first person that I've spoken to that has offered to go on a walk with their patients.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
Like, I would have loved to go on some walks.
Oh my
gosh,
I'd 100% rather do therapy on trails. Oh my God.
It's just, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's so much. Yeah. Well, you know, I got at NAU, I did my internship at NAU during COVID. We did a lot of walk and talk therapy outside, you know, keeping distance. So yeah, there's not everybody does that. But that, I guess my point is feel it out. See who you're meeting with.
Yeah.
Get to know them. Ask them questions. Therapy is the place that you do the hard things. So say what's uncomfortable. Acknowledge that you're feeling nervous. Acknowledge that you're feeling discomfort. Acknowledge that, you know, hey, you said something right there, or your face did this thing, and I'm not really sure what you mean by that. Let's talk about it. And I can't obviously speak for all therapists, but when my clients feel vulnerable enough to say those things, I like leap for joy. And I'm like, you just self-advocated. So I know that was really hard, but that was also amazing. So thank you for doing that. And then we move on to like, what's the, you know, what's the issue that they're asking to address? So anyway, I hope that answered the question. If it's a hell no, keep moving. And if it's an on the fence, give it a time or two and see.
Oh, I had a hell no just in passing at a store a couple of days
ago. Oh, really?
I've gotten good at it. Thank you. Lots of therapy and lots of, like you say, like self-advocation, checking in with my gut and realizing that, like, if my cat's gut instincts, so
totally.
Do I.
Yeah.
Right? Humans have instincts.
We do. We just don't pay attention to them.
We don't pay attention to them. Like, we're... And especially women, we're like, we're told to just like, oh, you know, just be nice, you know, just roll with it. Lately, there's a lot of that. Like, yeah, I know that there's all this shit going on in the world, but just roll with it. And meanwhile, all of our instincts are going like, everything's being attacked. But anyway, I love it. I love your approach. Do you have anything else that you want to tell people? This is your space.
No, I feel like I've said a lot of things. So thank you for taking such great care of me. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you for the invite.
Oh, yeah, of course. I hope we can do it again. Yeah,
this was fantastic. And I'm excited for you. I encourage you, like, in any way, if you decide you want to coach or become a therapist, like, you have the skills, you have the curiosity, you've already been doing it. So wherever you want to take
thank
that,
you.
You just
thank
do
you.
It.
I think continuing to be paid to be my authentic self is my
That's
goal.
That's the gift.
And this last year I was able to do that. You know, I mean, I do have my 9-to-5, which I adore, but I have a team and a mentor that allow me to absolutely be me.
That's priceless.
And that's what they rely on, you know? So when I'm in that space, I feel connected and valuable and empowered. Mm-hmm. And then when I'm doing this stuff, I feel connected and valuable and empowered. So I really, at this age, right, because I'm going to be 46 in February, I don't have fucks to give about things that don't make me
No, ma'am.
Happy
No, ma'am.
I don't have time. I don't have time.
Nope. No time for that.
There's no time.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Life is precious. Life is precious. It is. And we don't have, we just never know. So only give the fucks that you have to give.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there you go. That can be our ending. You guys give the fucks that you have to give. Go check out Dr. Annabale's website. I know you told me to call you Andrea, but you did work for that doctorate. So anyway, I know. Check out the Instagram. It's not only a beautiful logo with amazing font and everything is like just lovely on the eyes, but you've got some really great stuff under resources and the book club and the experts, which I was trolling. All of that's valuable. And you've got excellent information on the website. So again, that's onepsychservices.com. And I hope that you guys can connect. Yes,
thank you so much.
Absolutely. Don't leave. I'm going to hit the recording stop and then we'll debrief. Okay. Thanks for tuning in today. If you've found today's broadcast has brought you value, I want to hear about it. Email me at thepracticeofselfcare@gmail.com and tune in next time for some more good advice. Until then, enjoy your moments. Enjoy the journey.